Feral Audio.
It's time for another episode of Drew Drogi's Minor Revelations. I took a big inhale just now because I'm so excited. You guys, this week we are going to talk a lot about movies and a lot about sex, my two favorite things. It's going to get filthy or filthy adjacent. You know, I have wonderful guests today, Kyle Buchanan and Dhruv Singh, who just get just very candid. Kyle is a film. Nice, he doesn't really write film reviews anymore, as much as just really great articles. Check him out; he's on Vulture. Dhruv is like me, a huge fan of movies, and so we will talk about that. And with them in a bit. But I just want to give a couple shout outs because I haven't talked about movies in a while. And I want to give a couple shout outs to three incredible indies that if you haven't seen them, I highly recommend checking them out. The first one is on, I know it's on iTunes. It's called Lemon. It's Jenixa Bravo's new film starring the incredible Brett Gelman. It's so insanely, painfully, heartbreakingly hilarious. It's a completely singular film. I mean, it's not for everyone, but it is so for me. Brett plays like he's a lemon of a human being, which is, I'm assuming why the film's called Lemon, because he's just, I mean, just a wreck, and really broken. This very unsuccessful actor who's also an acting teacher, who is going on who's just in a series of horrible relationships. I don't want to give away too much, but really incredible performances across the board, and a lot of great comedy folk are in it. John Daly is hilarious as the neighbor, and Nia Long is wonderful, and it's fantastic. Check it out. It's just like I said, watch the trailer, and I said it's not going to be it's not a crowd pleaser, but oh my god, was it a Drew Drogi pleaser. Then another one that I really loved is Ingrid Goes West with Aubrey Plaza and Elizabeth Olsen, who give incredible performances. I'm sure you've heard of this. It's in the major cities, and I'm sure it'll be online places soon. It is just an incredible evisceration of all of us. It's just a takedown of social media. It is your worst nightmare. And it also has like a young adult vibe to it. It's like young adult meets single white female. Imagine if you have an Insta stalker who just assumes that you're friends because you just reply to one thing that she says on Instagram. And it's just this, again, painfully dark, truly fucked up, hilarious, blistering comedy. And really just like, I think it's fantastic. Elizabeth Olsen is just plays the perfect basic bitch Instagram, I mean, avocado toast loving, you know, brand new fucking Coachella fedora hat with feather wearing asshole. And plays it so brilliantly. And it's really wonderful. And Aubrey Plaza gives a terrifying, hilarious, painful performance in that movie. And then the third indie that I saw that I really loved that I also highly recommend that's not painful. I mean, it is painful, but it's so not dark. It's incredibly sentimental, and I shouldn't like it as much as I did, but it so worked for me and got me going so much, is a film called Patty Cakes, starring Danielle McDonald, who's this breakout star. I mean, it is just a beautiful film with the incomparable Bridget Everett, who I've seen and known and loved for years, who I just, if you get a chance to see her live, I mean, now she's going to be playing at the Hollywood Bowl because she's becoming a huge star. And oh my God, nobody deserves it more. Just a cabaret legend. This woman is always on stage wearing like a towel with like a sweaty glass of Chardonnay, with a voice that it's just this powerhouse, and she's super funny and sweaty and sexy and just like, She's just so fucking raw and true and beautiful, and plays the mom in this movie. And Kathy Moriarty, who is one of my all time favorites, is the grandmother, who gives an incredible performance. But it's a movie about small town Jersey white girl rapper who again has a dream, and it has a real 8 Mile kind of vibe to it. And again, it's very earnest, and it's a movie that, like, I feel like in lesser hands could just be really schmaltzy. And instead I was just there for it the whole time. I was into it, and it just so if you're looking for something that's not as bleak as the first two, I highly recommend Patty Cakes. So check them out. Lemon, Anger Goes, whoa, I can't talk. Lemon, Ingrid Goes West, and Patty Cakes. Check them out. Find them in theaters or online soon. That's all I have to say. Now let's welcome our guests. Hi, guys. How are you two?
Hi, Drew. Good.
Good.
Oh, wonderful. I'm sitting here with the delightful Kyle Buchanan and Dhruv Singh.
Thanks for having us.
Yes, thank you so much for being on here.
Oh, my God. I'm so excited. How is your hot Wednesday afternoon?
Awful.
Yeah, it's awful.
I'm trying to coax my dog through it.
He
just sort of refuses to go out.
Oh,
he just
honey.
Sort of flips down.
What kind of dog do you have?
I have a terrier.
Oh.
He's very cute, very enthusiastic.
They're my favorite.
Loves to go out traditionally, loves to meet people and other dogs.
Uh-huh.
But he gives me this expression when we go out, like, you can't be serious, really, in this heat.
Yeah, they get it. They feel it. I saw on the sidewalk by... I live in austere Franklin Village, but there's all these restaurants on the side, and everybody brings their dogs to the restaurants. And the dogs yesterday were just like flat on the ground, just dead on the ground. It was terrible.
Yeah, and even that's not great because the ground is so fucking hot.
I know.
Right now.
Yeah,
I know. It's just like, what do you even do? But I grew up with terriers. I had a Boston Terrier growing up that was my favorite dog of all time.
Named?
Dorchester.
Dorchester. Oh, that's how did that happen?
Well, it's a borough in Boston.
Oh.
And we went through names because when we got a Boston Terrier, we were like, what are some names that are like really cute? And we're like, oh, Dorchester is perfect. and he just looked like it. And he just seemed like a gentleman named Dorchester, this little Boston Terrier. But then we found out, this was in the late 80s. Yeah, this would have been like 88, 89 when we got him. And we found out like a month after we named him that that's where the New Kids on the Block were from. And
yeah.
We were mortified because we were like, that's so uncool. And we hope nobody finds out. But, you know, in North Carolina, no one really, you know, it was pre-internet. So no one really knew all that kind of, you know, deep
that
cut
kind of trivia.
Stuff. Right.
Well,
exactly.
What was, do you have a nickname for him?
Yeah, something with four syllables.
No, it was only Dorchester.
Really?
Yeah, that's all that we call. And
very
then
fancy.
He just, it so fit him. And then he lost one of his legs because he fell down the stairs at our house. Like he was trying to, he used to be able to run up the stairs and he could, with his weight, push open the door at the top of the stairs.
Huh.
Well, he just timed it wrong and fell down the stairs, broke his leg, and the vet put the cast on too tight.
Oh, no.
And they had to remove his leg. And I remember my parents' reaction was like, it was so nice that the vet didn't charge us to remove the leg. And I was infuriated. As I was like, you guys are doing this wrong. Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, sounds like malpractice.
Yeah.
Veterinary.
Yeah. But apparently, I guess some dogs, like, because normally a dog, they were saying, would, like, bite at the cast and stuff if it was feeling like it was the circulation was being cut off, but he didn't.
Well, that's victim blaming.
And I know, exactly. Thank you. And so he only had three legs, but it never seemed to bother him. He hopped along most of his life with just three.
Yeah, dogs are
really
surprisingly adaptable. I have a friend who had a dog that got hit by a truck and then they had to amputate a leg. And when you looked at the dog as he came in a room, you didn't even notice he had three legs. It took about an hour because of the way he'd bound around for you to go, oh, wait a minute, he's only got three legs. They're so adaptable.
Yeah.
Now, can we afford like a sad Sarah McLachlan track to underscore this conversation?
Yeah, it's just like, oh, and just sobbing, crying. How in those commercials do they literally make it look like the dogs are literally crying?
Yeah.
You know? I get so upset though on Facebook when people share like hurt animal videos.
Oh, yeah.
I just can't.
I can't either.
Even a lost dog flyer? I mean, obviously I understand the necessity of it, but there's nothing sadder than a flyer that says, lost lost dog needs medicine to live.
Oh, God, I know. I know. Sad. You're just like, well, when you see lost cat, you're like, goodbye, because we live in coyote country, and it's just not a good sign. And I love cats, too. I'm a dog and a cat person. And no other animals. Drew was in my improv class years ago.
I was.
Do you remember when I used to have a rule about, like, you're not allowed to hurt dogs or cats on stage?
Yes.
Is that a
thing that came up?
Comes up all the time in improv.
I think it's a panic move.
People panic and they go, like, they start a scene and the groundlings especially, you're taught to, like, start a scene in a big emotion. And so they start, like, with crying. And it's always, lights up, grandma's dead or the dog is dead.
And often a shovel is accompanied with that, where you're shoveling a live grave for one of those animals.
Exactly. And it's always like, why? Okay, first of all, like, that's first of all, anybody would cry at that. Like, that's so, it's not like that's interesting, and it's not like you're telling us anything about your character.
It's not a point of view.
You're right. Like, I'm like, cry over, cry over spilt milk, because that'll tell us more about who you are. But don't cry over something that everybody, it's a total panic move. Like, I got to make something really big happen.
Yeah.
So what's the worst thing? My dog's dead or my grandma's dead. And I mean, 99 times out of 100 people, the students are like, I know, I don't know why I went there. They're like, it's just the worst thing I could think of.
Yeah.
But it's like, but we don't want to watch that. Like, we don't want to, unless you're going to have like a really interesting take on this dead animal, which, it's just not going to be
hard.
That way. It's very hard.
I know that improv is sort of a free for all and a no judgment zone, but do you ever find that you can sort of like get a glimpse into somebody's inner sociopath?
100%. You get, because people, they're naked, when they get up there to do it.
There's no script, there's no props, there's no costumes, it's just them.
You see where it goes and when people will naturally go for it. And it's like, I'm sure you've seen Jimmy Fallon's video that he made with his mock improv class. Have you seen that?
No.
He did a video. You've got it. You guys all have to check it out. Jimmy Fallon made this amazing video. Google Jimmy Fallon improv class, and he plays like 20 different people that are all in an improv class together, and it's like everything, like blown up times 1,000. But there's one guy that's like way too sexual. There's like an older gay man that is just so disgusting, and there's the one guy that's using it as an opportunity to like flirt with girls, and just then like there's the actress in the class who's just like, things are going really well for me, and this is just really what I want to, but you really do see where people are coming from.
You really do. Yeah.
There's some people you're like, oh wow, not a lot has happened to you. And it's like, and that's like, not like it's very hard. That was hard for me when I was a teacher, when I would just to be like, I don't really know how to give you, I can give you a million examples for what you could do, but I don't want you to do anything that I would tell you to do. But to a lot of people, they're like, wow, you've gone through a pretty nice and easy life. That must be wonderful. And not like I've had a terrible life. I've had a, comparatively very lovely life too, but there's some people you're like, wow, they've never seen the world through anything but the rose-tinted glasses. And
they're not drawing from their own lives. They're drawing from other comedy.
Yes. From other comedy. Yes. Or from, what they think would be funny or what they think would be interesting. Or just like to them, like, a really great character to come in is like their friend Steve, who's just really cool. And you're like, that's, I'm like, who was a bully to you? Or like, who was the worst boss you've ever had? Or who's that family member that you like dread going to see? Whatever.
There's also once in a while, there's like a complete mystery when you're trying to, when you see a person, like there was someone, I was in an improv class a while ago, and there was one guy who, no matter what the scene was, every single scene, at some point, to sort of, when he was justifying the relationship or like, labeling who they are to each other, would every single time say, look, I know you're married to my sister. And he did that. And I have no idea what the backstory is of why that was.
Wow. That's says a lot right there. Yeah. He's got, there's some issues there.
It was so fascinating.
But also, like, that's his go-to always. Like, that implies anything.
Yeah.
Look, I know you're married to my sister.
Yeah, it's like, okay.
So that means
that
what?
It was how he would, like, if he was being weird to that person, he would justify that way. If that person was being odd and he had to be okay with it, he would say that. You know what I mean? It was just a good
stock
option.
I love that so much. But, you can, and, there's the thing too, like, I mean, you know, you obviously can't judge, you can't say you are this kind of a person, but you know, you have to, but I learned to like stop things quickly because you're like, when it starts going down a road, but you're like, it's just not going to get any better.
Yeah. And, you're a great teacher, Drew. I think one thing I learned from Drew a lot was, you know, you were saying improv's kind of a free for all and there's not a judgment thing, but I think one thing the term you used a lot was like, that is, I think, you said something like that's a lower percentage choice.
Yeah, that's what we're trying to teach. It's like percentages because I like that because it's like there can be a scene about a dead dog that's hilarious.
Just less likely.
It's wonderful. I mean, like I'm trying to think of an example in a movie. I mean, I think of like okay, dead grandma or dead mother. The play Loot by Joe Orton is hilarious, and the play they're banging a dead woman around.
Yeah.
The whole play, but it's. It's so like it can work, like, but like it's so much harder to do.
It's just a lower percentage.
So when you're learning improv, like, why give yourself that horrible hill to climb on top of doing improv?
Yeah.
Because also, like, you know, I love John Waters, but I don't want to see a scene where lights up where you're eating shit.
Yeah.
Like, it's not, I mean, I'm not interested in that. And it's not because I'm going to be offended. It's just more like, okay, you're going for a laugh and it's gross and it's just like, what's the point?
Yeah. If you're starting to play poker, don't go all in on an ace high.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I know. Well, thank you. Drew, if you're getting ready to start over at the Groundlings.
Yes,
excited.
I am. I'm pretty excited. Yeah.
You're going to be in the Sunday Company.
That's right. That's right.
In November.
In November,
We were just talking about it, so I'm like recapping.
Wait, so Drew, so you taught him at what point in his
improv
career?
I had you at level one, right?
Oh,
intermediate.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay,
and what did you discern then?
Oh my God, he was hilarious in the day he walked in. Always. Nice. I've always loved Drew and his.
Thank you, Drew. You
always just brought in such weird characters. You're able to play slime balls like and still be really charming.
Thank you. I do like
that's
slime
my
balls.
Favorite thing that you play, like really horrible people that where we like love you for it.
Oh,
like,
thanks. I do like doing that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that there's something freeing about tapping into your id when you're doing comedy.
Yeah, completely. When you get to be like, I get to be this horrible person. And, you know, I know that's all I ever want to play. When I'm always like a nice person, I'm like, okay, snooze. Moving on.
Yeah.
Moving on. Yeah. And Kyle, you are working now. You move around.
I'm at New York Magazine.
You're
at
New York Magazine. Okay. Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Vulture. And they're the same?
Well, Vulture is it's the entertainment wing of New York Magazine. It used to just sort of be like another vertical to use blog speak.
Right.
But it became so big that it's its own website. So I basically write for there, and then some of my stuff also appears in print. But the print stuff comes out every 2 weeks, and Vulture is every 10 minutes there's something.
Oh, yeah. There's
you have, if in an alternate universe, I would you have the job I just would dream.
Really?
Like, I love movies. I'm the biggest nerd.
Oh my God, me too. Kyle and I get together, we run into each other at Akbar, and
Drew
we will like
taste.
Hold court and be like, what have you seen lately? What have you seen?
Because
I feel the same way, Drew. I think that'd be such a,
I mean, I'm sure it's super hard and there's a lot of work involved, but I just mean the world of it is so.
No, absolutely. Like next week I'm going to the Toronto Film Festival, which is, these things are exhausting.
Yeah. You know? Yes.
And maybe I make it that way because I want to see everything. Yeah. I want to go to every party. I want to interview everybody. I want to live that maximal life.
Of course.
And, I come home and I'm like half dead for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
But it's incredible. And it's so intoxicating to be around that and to have the conversations that you and I have, Drew.
Right.
When we meet up at Akbar every weekend.
I know.
What have you seen? You get to have those like on the regular. You know, you could be waiting in line for the bathroom at a restaurant and just say to some random person, what have you seen? And then suddenly, you know, you're off.
I know. That's my so I cool. love film festivals for that reason. And whenever I get to go, I also try to see as much as I can. And, you know, it's like every year at Outfest and people, you know, laugh at me. They're like, why are you breaking your neck to get across town to see everything? I'm like, because for 11 days, I'm going to see things that I never would get to see otherwise. And like, that's kind of the point of it. Like there is the it is a marathon. And yeah, you could always hang out and, you know, and do nothing and just go to a couple parties or just go to the movies that you're involved in or whatever. But you miss out on so much.
Yeah.
And I mean, I've got to say, like, and every time I've gone out of town to a film festival and I've gotten to see, you know, I'll be there with something I'm a part of and then I'll have an extra day and I'll just see whatever is at the festival that I can get a ticket for. And it's like, if it's bad, you can always walk out, but you almost never do. And then you talk to people afterwards and, you know, at Sundance, it's so fun to be on that shuttle, you know, in Park City and just like talk to strangers because that's what the conversation is always about. So you're like, what have we just seen? And, you know, and it's really, it's fascinating. I remember the one time I went and saw James Franco's Interior Leather Bar at Sundance. And it was playing at the, which is, Drew, have you seen the William Friedkin movie Cruising?
Yes.
Okay, so James Franco made this sort of weird, offshoot of like, Cruising had all this cut footage that was all like in the leather bar that they like couldn't use at the time, you know, that was too scandalous. And
right.
So James Franco decided to reenact the vibe and sort of remake the lost footage.
Sort of.
Sort of. And then
yes. With a new narrative, with a different
Yeah, I think that might be giving
it
too much.
Like they were sort of figuring it out as they
figuring out as they were going.
Right.
And
right.
then with that, he interspersed like real couples having sex like in their apartment, which I didn't understand.
Oh.
And then there's a lot of like a straight actor on the phone outside with his girlfriend deciding whether he's going to do this or not. Like play this Al Pacino role in the reenactment. And it's.
And those scenes are faked. Like, so
yes.
There's a whole lot of.
So it's a lot of like, what is
on.
This about? And the most interesting part of the whole thing is just James Franco's fascination with gay life and with leather culture and all that. And I would love just an hour interviewing him and him. You know, his interest in all that, that's not, anyway, because his fetish for gay things and is more interesting to me than the
right.
actual fetish of the, you know, in the
yeah,
world.
Absolutely.
And I think Cruising's a brilliant movie, and I think it's, you know, and I don't really know that it needs to be explored any more than what it is. Anyway, but the most fun was the after that screening on the shuttle, and it was like an hour away from Sundance. It was like a long shuttle ride back in the snow in January. The people of all walks of life,
truly,
who, yes,
at Sundance. I mean, you have
Sundance has everything.
Real housewife like socialites.
Oh right. Yes.
From,
oh yeah.
Like, Salt Lake City.
Oh,
who
yeah.
Come down.
I've never been to Sundance.
Hollywood types.
It's exhausting, and I've been twice, and it is like I don't know. Kyle, it must be insane for you because
it's
like
incredibly exhausting, but one of the most fun things I do.
Yeah.
In my job.
It really is because you get up before the sun's out and you catch a shuttle, and the first movie starts at 8 a.m.
Oh.
And sometimes you have to wait in line to get in, and
yes.
you know, and but anybody can go.
Sounds like a dream.
And so you can just, especially people with money, they will just buy like, you know, a $1,500 package and just get tickets to whatever they want, and they'll just like get a house for the week, and it's just like a thing to do. And so yeah, you get everything, but just the rage that was on that bus about that James Franco movie, and everyone together just screaming about it, and then like, wait, was this? What was that about? What was this? And it was almost like anyone that loved this was just shamed quiet on that bus. But anyway, but it was this weird unifier for like, I was like, I would never talk to these people about anything else.
So
and it is like, you know, so many people have like sports as this thing that they can all like sort of talk about at a bar.
Right.
And I don't have that. And so it's like, when you get to talk about movies in that way and be so emotional and you know, and you and I, Kyle, like, see, you know, we're pretty eye to eye. We see a lot, you know, but when we disagree, I love hearing, wow, you disagree with me. Like, it's so fun to just sort of talk like that in that way. And I get why people are so into it.
Well, I don't know if you feel the same way, Drew, but, you know, so I used to be the film critic of The Advocate when, you know, it still was a print publication. And I really learned a lot from doing that. Obvious things, but then also the fact that, like, I'm a gay guy. And when I would go to these screenings when I was in my 20s, almost everybody else in those rooms would be, you know, these like 60 or 70 year old straight white male critics. And like, it just really taught me that a film is subjective. You know, your reaction is not empirical. And I think that we have treated people's reactions to movies as empirical, as like, you know, like what practically something that you would inscribe onto stone.
Yes.
Right.
And that's because, like, you know, straight white guys have gotten to define just about every reaction
Absolutely.
To everything for so long.
And it's like, you know, it's like, well, you know, you know, Roger Ebert loved movies and was a wonderful writer, but oh my God, was he wrong about so many things in
all
my
the
opinion.
Time.
He never understood John Waters. And I was like, if you don't get John Waters, then I don't know what you're doing. I mean, you know, and I've a favorite that I hadn't seen in years, maybe a year ago, I watched The Hunger. And I just like, what were the reviews like when they came out? And Roger Ebert gave it such a tepid review, like, meh, it's all style and it's not really that great.
Yeah.
And you're like, wow, that, like, you know, And that's just, it's just one person's opinion. Yeah. And there are other things that I would agree with him. But he had a book called I Really, Really, Really Hated This Movie. Mm-hmm. And on the cover of it, I mean, he had his hands up like Macaulay Culkin in Home Alone. And there's so many movies in that book that I love.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
it's like, wow, like, it's he just yeah. camp, anything camp and queer, he just did not, didn't it like, did not scan for him.
Like, I get it. Like, the allure of, like, a scathing review. Like, we're all sure. subject. Like, it, yeah. it's, you love that shit. Yeah. It's hilarious.
Pauline Kael, Xana Don't.
Yeah, well.
You know, did you know that yes, on Xana do. That was the yeah. entire review. She yeah, took out an entire that. Column that just said Xana Don't.
But yeah. it's really made me realize, like, how much of movie going is subjective. Objective. And yeah. when I wrote yeah. The Advocate, I tried to write all of my articles as though there was almost like a built-in decoder ring mm-hmm. that you could read them and you would get my opinion, but there would be enough transparency about it that you could say, well, I come into this with different life experiences, you know, even though he didn't right. like it. Yeah. I have a sense that I might, you know, I think that's a better way to look at movies. Even the act of going to a film festival, seeing something like Interior Leather Bar or really any of these movies mm-hmm. That are outside anybody's wheelhouse makes you realize that even a bad movie can contain good performances, absolutely. Interesting ideas, and a good movie can contain all, you know, a whole lot of bad shit too.
I definitely feel like some of my favorite film reviews I've read, whether like some of Pauline Kael's best stuff or Andrew Sarah, even people I disagree with, mm-hmm. Are the ones where even when I disagree with them, I get a feeling of the movie from reading them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They transmit a little bit of like, oh, this is what it's like to watch the movie. So even though I didn't like this
yeah, like
part
a little
of it,
perfume, you a little know? Perfume. Like a yeah. scent of it.
Exactly. You get a scent of the movie. You get a sense of the visuals. You get a sense of the feel. Yeah, those are
right.
My favorites.
And I remember I used to read reviews because I think also it's you're trained from being in school. Like I wanted to see how many stars the movie would
right.
get. Or like Entertainment yeah. Weekly would literally to this day gives them A, B, C, D, F, like yeah, in grade school.
Ugh.
And I used to really care about that because yeah. I think it was also we're trained to score films in that way.
Yeah.
And now it's my least favorite part of something. I don't care how many stars something gets. I really want to read. Yeah. And there are many times I'll read a review and I'm like, I can't really tell if the reviewer liked this or not. And that used to drive me crazy. And now I'm like, I get it because it is that. It is the kind of thing where you're like, you know, if... You know, I remember, you know, when LA Weekly, like, reviewed, this is in theater, but they reviewed the tour of August Osage County and slammed it for not being as good as a Cherry Orchard or one of the Chekhov plays. And it's like, well, that is, first of all, like, that's so, the play has been proven to be like this, you know, it's like, what about this production? Like, what mm-hmm. about, like, it's, if you don't like the play, that's fine, but that's kind of not why we would read a review. Like, it's already won all these awards and Pulitzer and Tony and stuff. So what's the point of being like, well, it's not as good as Chekhov. Well, what you know what I mean? Where's your standard there? You know? And so like, yeah. I don't like when you read, you know, when there is a review that sort of, you know, basically that when it's a personal thing, like I just didn't like this mm-hmm. thing versus like being a little bit more critical of like the whole product, you know? Mm-hmm. And yeah, like I said, there are many, I love reading reviewers even when I disagree with the movie in it or disagree with the review. You know, it's, you know, when they're really well written and,
yeah.
Melissa Anderson is somebody who like can just be so hateful and about, I love reading her reviews because there's something, even yeah. when I disagree,
yeah.
when maybe I'm like, oh, I loved her. A movie or I hate it, you know, but she will just rip something apart. And, I think she was the one that was like, when that was the review in the, where for The Voice when it was for Tyler Perry's movie, I Can Do Battle by Myself. And she wrote, and she said, Tyler Perry proves, you know, she was like, as writer, director, editor, star, and producer, Tyler Perry certainly proves that he can do battle by himself. And it's just like, oh, so man.
Yeah, see, that's
good.
Delicious.
There is delicious. A, yeah.
Have you ever relished a bad review?
I mean, I think the bad reviews or the bad, because I don't review anymore, but I will still write features about yeah. things where you can, it's not hard to glean my opinion.
Right.
But I think the bad things or the sort of putatively bad movies that I relish are movies that are so bad they're good or yeah. ultimately are bad by like a really square standard, mm-hmm. but that I was fucking living for while
yeah,
I watched them.
Yeah, yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
That would be some other man's trash, but yeah, for me, right. was,
oh, some of my
were so much more invigorating
movies.
Than yes, some other
yes,
films.
Yes, I fully, yeah, some of my favorite movies are objectively bad to probably most viewers, but I'm like, there's some,
oh, but,
it hits
oh,
a
really
part
like
of
what?
Yeah.
Do you have one?
I'm trying to think, like, there's a couple of De Palma.
Sure. Yeah, well, that's a great example of it. Yeah.
They're not objectively well-made plots or anything, but that they hit a part of me that make me feel
well, like,
a certain
double
way.
Is one
Body
that,
Double
like, is like, I can't argue that this is like, I mean, it's misogynist.
Oh.
It is
the
trash.
Dress to Kill.
So bad.
The protagonist
so
is terrible.
Awful.
But there's sequences in it where I'm just like,
course,
captivated.
Yeah,
but,
yeah,
but I love it. Yeah. I'm riveted by it.
I mean, Dress to Kill is one of my favorites.
Yeah,
I watched that with a friend of mine who's trans, and she said, this should be offensive to me on every level, but I love this movie
so
much.
Because the
villain is a villain because... Michael K. Oh, I don't want to spoil.
I think you just did.
I just did.
I also love that Brian De Palma movies give away the ending in the title. I mean, Dress to Kill is like, so you know, what does that mean other than someone who's dressing up? You know, and then Body Double is literally revealed, like, actually Melanie Griffith has been a body double the whole time. And you're like, wait, what? Yeah.
And this looks like thin Hitchcock of
completely.
Veneers over that.
But I mean, like, I could watch Angie Dickinson walk around a museum.
Yes.
Amazing.
For hours.
And you basically do.
You really do. Yeah. You really do.
Yeah.
And just why, like, close up on full blonde bush at the beginning of that movie? Why? Why? And yet, thank you. We need it for the aesthetic of what's happening. But
I went to the Arrow to watch that not long ago.
Oh, yeah.
They were doing like a revival thing of it, and they had a slightly extended cut, and the only extended scene that I could discern was that shower scene. It was longer.
Yeah.
Wow. Longer lingering.
We definitely need more of that.
Yeah. I remember, and God, I don't remember if it was George Lucas, but it was sort of a similarly sexless filmmaker who said this. Don't quote me on it being George Lucas, but imagine a George Lucas type.
Yeah.
But he said that why he loved De Palma is that you could watch a movie like Carrie and you would see so much bush in the first minute that you would think the movie could go anywhere from there.
It's so true. And also, like, so beautiful, like, in the way that like, because, I mean, Carrie, the beginning of that movie is so gorgeous until it immediately turns into the, you know,
this horror
for her when it gets to Carrie. But that, you know, and it's like, what other filmmaker can make you watch high school girls nakedly going through a locker room and with, like, the beautiful Pino Donaggio music and just being like, this is gorgeous.
This is gorgeous.
And you're like, it is.
Yeah.
It's great.
I mean, like, what is that? Blowout. You know, there's that parody at the beginning of like, a slasher thing. And even though it's a bad parody, I'm still leaning forward in my seat.
Oh,
like,
absolutely.
You know, even though it's intentionally terrible.
Yeah.
Well, the new Twin Peaks, The Return. Like,
which I haven't watched.
There are so many, like, dissonant, clanging notes in it. Like, so many even acting choices that would seem to be bad, like almost empirically bad. Mm-hmm. And yet the way he sort of folds them into this tapestry, I'm obsessed and they're brilliant.
Yeah.
You know, like, something doesn't have to be traditionally good.
That's David Lynch.
To be
because that's always sort of, that's sort of like a stumbling block for me. And I get it on a level of like, and I wish I liked David Lynch more. I wish I loved David Lynch because it's something that I wish I got it on like a core level.
I think is the way that you do get it or you don't.
Yeah.
Right. Like,
yeah.
It either
does something to you viscerally or it doesn't. Yeah. And for me, I'm always distant from it. And I think a lot of it is like, the acting is like, what? Why was that the choice? But you know, you're watching like a masterpiece. So
it's very intentional.
Like, I'm not like going, oh, this, well, they should have done that again and made it better, you know, because it's like, the messiness and the imperfections are what make it genius, you know.
Yeah.
But it's
I think that what you just said about the hitting you in your core or not is so that's kind of one of the reasons why I enjoy comedy, or at least as from a performing point of view, because it's so black or white. Like, it's either, if you get a laugh, there's no arguing with it. It's not like a drama where you can be like, well, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you're saying that, and yet I find that, okay, so the two things that you would expect would get the most visceral, like, honest, pure reactions, comedy and, like, a pop song, are the two things that people will disavow actually having liked and responded to.
Interesting.
Like, they get all torn up and, like, I can't admit that I liked it. And it's like, listen to yourself.
It's a lower art or something.
Right.
You know? I don't know.
They definitely do. And they'll have to have, like, a sort of an intellectual reaction to...
That's true.
To why they laughed. And sometimes it's like, it just made you laugh. And there are things that either just, you know, I think it is, it's so subjective. I mean, I get what you're saying, because it's like, you get up and you're like, I either got laughs or I didn't. And so it's that immediate reaction, you know, whereas when someone's, what, you know, when you're doing a drama in front of an audience, you're like, I have no idea how well this is going.
Right. Yeah.
You know, but it's just, it's so fascinating to me that, you know, when you do like a play and you do a run for months and every night you're doing the same play and in same size audience and they will laugh at different moments. Some nights they don't laugh at all.
That's true.
Some nights you can't get them to calm down and it gets annoying how much they're,
yep.
And you're like, we're not that different.
Yeah.
Tonight than we were last night.
The crowd has its own
and
energy.
The crowd has its own sort of vibe.
It's
and
subjective
then,
again.
It's so subjective.
It's so subjective.
I noticed
strange.
That I saw, well, I've seen this movie 3 times now, but I saw Girl Strip when it was first out in theaters.
Uh-huh.
And I had a blast watching it, but it was a completely different crowd each time. And the first time
right.
it was like a pretty rowdy Sunday night crowd. And it was a completely different movie. You know, the movie changes
yeah.
so, a comedy
yeah.
especially, I think.
And you're like, this is constant. This is like, play the movie. It is what it is.
Yeah.
And yet the audience is the variable.
Yeah.
And that,
exactly.
That's, yeah.
And the first yeah. laugh is probably the big variable too, right?
That's
like
true.
When
yes.
the audience
yes.
realizes
an audience
a collective
needs,
first laugh.
They need that person, and it's something that like I love. I mean, because I mean, I as you both know, I laugh out loud a lot when I'm enjoying something, and I don't do it just to not to like help the audience along because I'm such a good person, but like I am a big believer in like an audience gets the show they deserve, and I'm like if I'm enjoying something, I'm gonna let people. I mean, and it's also just naturally I will laugh back at something, but I know that like that. You need someone like me in the audience to laugh at a comedy to give people permission to laugh. Because I think a lot of people, especially because they're used to watching things at home, they're enjoying something and their faces are just sort of pleasant.
Yeah.
And they're sort of, you know, they're sort of watching and then afterwards they're like, that was hilarious. But you're like, wow, you didn't give me any sense of, you know, you need that person to give you, you know, you need that big, boisterous, insane laugh to make everyone go, oh, okay, we can laugh
at this. We have permission, yeah.
You know, yeah. We had one audience in our the play I did earlier, super campy over the top the Charles Bush play I did earlier this year, and one of our audiences were these college kids and their teacher didn't tell them that they were watching camp. And so at intermission I had some friends that were in the audience that night and they were like, these kids are in line and they're going, I think this is funny. And then the other one's like, I think it is too. Can we laugh? It was the worst. We were on stage going, we're dying. Fuck these kids. They're not getting it. They don't understand. And I'm like, they're sitting out there terrified
yeah.
that they don't know that they're allowed to laugh out loud.
And
because,
yet this is hilarious.
Yeah, I know. And you're like, how do you not just, because they also, it's like, I'm sure it's like intro to theater kids. So they're not
yeah.
like naturally performers or they don't get what this is. Because I'm like, this to me is so obviously, but I think they were like, I don't want to be rude. And laugh
yeah.
if these people are serious. And I'm like, I am in full drag and I'm like, you know, we're basically like,
laugh.
You know, like making out with our children and we're just like stabbing and killing each other. It's like, obviously it's a joke, but they, you know, they didn't get it until they were told like, yeah, you actually can laugh at this. And also like your teacher can burn in hell for not telling you, like, you're getting ready to watch a comedy. This is what camp is. And maybe let's watch, you know, Whatever Happened to Baby Jane before we watch this play. So, you know, like, kind of what we're going for and
yeah.
what we're doing. Oh, anyway, I don't want to run out of time. I want to hear stories from you guys.
Yeah.
Who wants to go first?
I feel like maybe I should.
Okay.
Yeah,
like, okay.
Yeah, I have
you
to
might
leave
have to, you might have
soon.
To talk out early.
Okay, so this is a whole journey.
Great.
Really? And there's sex involved, so if
oh
any of my
God,
family members
it.
Are listening, maybe tap out now. So this takes place when I was, I mean, like, really young. When, you know, when we were baby gays, it was pre-everything.
Mm-hmm.
Pre-apps,
pre-television.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We went to the Abbey on Dinosaurs. So I didn't have a ton of gay friends when I first got into the game.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't have a super active sex life, but I do remember. So there was this one night that sort of kicked off this chain reaction of crazy events, that left me with a whole lot of, well, now I've done that.
Oh, yeah.
I went to Here Lounge. Remember
uh-huh.
that? Was
oh
the
yeah.
Thing? It was like
sure.
mostly lesbian, like kind of glam
uh-huh.
lesbian.
Uh huh. It was right next to the Abbey,
yeah.
and now it's called the Chapel.
What is it now? Well,
I don't know. Okay, yeah.
I went with my friend Angel and our friend Helen, who was a lesbian, and it was that sort of like end of the night potential pair off. Like
in my mind, I'm imagining Angel from Rent and Helen Hunt.
You know, whatever works for you, it wouldn't be bad. At the end of the night, there's this sort of pair off that happens. You know, I found like this like kind of nice guy that I was talking to. Angel was talking to this guy who would not shut up, and Helen was sort of stuck with this girl that she was not into. But we were all walking back to our cars, and I think there was just that sort of like vague sense of like, so are we going to call it quits? Are any of us going in each other's cars back to our homes? What's the deal? And in the middle of this, this SUV pulls up alongside the curbs back when everyone drove SUVs for some reason.
Sure.
And there's this blonde Twinkie dude inside driving. He rolls down the window and he's like, hey, where's the party? In West Hollywood, where like, I wouldn't know where the party was if it hit me. And we're like, nowhere. The bars just got out. And he's like, oh, well, you guys want to come back to my place? We'll make a party there. And I was like, And Angel said, let's all get in. So everybody got in except Helen and her poor woman that she was stuck with. And so we're in this car.
Her charwoman.
I'm the passenger seat, so I'm making conversation with this guy that we just met, driving the SUV, driving us back to his place. Find out that he's a dancer. I'm like, oh, what sort of things have you danced in? This is really going to date the story. He's like, oh, well, you know, I'm in this like sort of big movie that's coming out next summer. You might see me in a dance sequence at the end. It's called Geely.
Wow. Yeah.
And we get back to this guy's place and we're all hanging out.
I don't remember there being a dance sequence.
There actually is. There, okay. I mean, like.
Because I did see that in the theater and it was a lot of fun to laugh at.
Yeah. I mean, speaking of things that lead you on a journey where you're unsure of the destination, the movie ends with like a musical number, like a Baywatch parody on the beach with what's his name from The Hangover playing a mentally handicapped man.
Yes, I remember
it's
that.
Just insanity. Yeah,
it's Justin Bartha.
And so he's in that.
Yeah.
Wow.
He is one of the dancers in that scene.
Right.
So we get back to this guy's place. We're, you know, having drinks, playing a little truth or dare. Angel's like basically my only gay friend at that point. And so when the truth or dares were getting like a little bit PG-13, he's like, I don't know. Kyle's like my brother. I feel like I can't do this in front of him. So I'm like, that's my cue. I will go use the bathroom. So I go use the bathroom. I'm walking back, walk past this guy's bedroom, the guy who picked us up. And he's got this wall of caps, like maybe 150 caps, like just all on pegs that he's like nailed into the wall. It was a very,
first of all,
interesting
ew.
Situation. I don't know. And so I'm like, I walk into his room to examine the caps and he comes in. And he says, hey, Vegas, because I'm wearing a T-shirt that says Las Vegas. I'm like, what's happening here? Hey, and he comes up and it's like extremely flirtatious and starts making out with me. And I think, OK, what's going to happen if this guy that I was sort of hitting on at Here Lounge comes in and sees us, which is exactly what happened. And then he joined in. And then Angel and his chatty guy come in and they're like, what's happening? What's going on? And then they join in and then. Baby's first orgy.
Beautiful.
Basically.
Yeah.
So we're having this, you know, 5-person hookup on a bed. Again, I was not very sexually experienced at that time. So I was like, well, all this is happening now.
Right.
Angel and I having this sort of brotherly friendship. Angel was like, this is so weird. I can't put my hands here and there. And then the guy that Angel had brought back from here would not shut up. He was always how do you feel about this?
Ew.
Is that good? How big is that?
Stop.
Dominating this whole thing with this running pattern. No, absolutely not. It's an orgy. You got to be egalitarian.
Yeah.
It's the director's commentary.
Right.
So we get to a point where Angel just like sits up and he's like, I can't do this. I'm too Catholic for this. And he says, Kyle, you have to drive me home. And I mean, at this point, you know, obviously, like, way pre-Uber, pre-everything, and Angel was my, like, best friend. So I'm like, I guess I'm going to leave this orgy and drive my friend home who's having this crisis of conscience.
Just suddenly? I don't know.
Yeah, super suddenly. Wow. I mean, I later found out that he had stolen Vicodin from this dude and just, like, wanted to make, like, a clean getaway.
Oh, my God.
But I drove Angel home, and then I was like, I'm going to go back. And I went back. And fortunately, the chatty guy was gone.
How long? Okay,
it's like an hour-long drive. Okay, it was from West Hollywood to Los Feliz. Yeah, I got back. At that point, I think they had discovered the Vicodin theft, but they were still like, whatever, let's resume this as a threesome.
Right.
So we had fun. It was all good. That's part one of the story. So then the following like Monday, Angel and I get together at Akbar, and he's like, so? And I'm like, yeah, so? And he's like, so let's agree to never speak about that again. And I'm like, okay. You know, if we're going to sort of keep the equilibrium of our friendship, let's not. Whatever. Fine. I don't know. But then that night, there was this guy at Akbar who just sort of kept cruising me. He had these, like, gigantic Margaret Keane eyes. Like, that was his most memorable feature. Just enormous anime eyes. and it was just a little too, like, X-ray vision. Just, like, he wouldn't stop looking at me from any point I was. Uh-huh. I would get distracted. I was like, this guy's looking at me. I can feel it, like, boring holes in the back of my skull. But near the end of the night, I go to use the bathroom. Maybe I should. Maybe the moral of the story is: anytime I go to use the bathroom, chaos can happen in my absence.
Yes.
Because I come back and he's talking to Angel. Like, so the two of them are talking. And I'm like, I'm gonna have to talk to this guy
that I don't know.
I'm feeling.
Sure.
So I go up to Angel. We're talking. He goes to get a drink, and Angel's like, "Are you thinking what I'm thinking?" And I said, "What are you thinking?" And he's like, "Threesome." And I'm like, I thought the whole thing here was that we weren't going to cross this Rubicon anymore.
Right.
But whatever. I was still young and impressionable. So I'm like, sure. So we go back to Angel's house with this dude. I smoke my very first cigarette, which I hated, was not into. I'm like, how do people get into
people
this?
People always hate their first cigarette, which is fascinating. Why?
Well, I hated my first beer, and I was like, I don't understand alcoholics, and now it's like water to me.
Yeah.
You have to work at it a little bit.
You have to
get over that initial hump.
Yep.
No pun intended. And so then we went into Angel's room, and we're hooking up, but this guy was still very laser-focused on me. And, you know, if you're in that sort of situation, you really have to make sure that, like, everybody's accounted for, nobody's got hurt feelings or feels left out.
Right.
Yeah. And Angel did. So he's like, listen, if you just want to be with Kyle, go back to Kyle's house, basically kicking us out. So at that point, like, you know, we're halfway there. I take him back to my house. Things happen. And in the morning, he's like, wow, I've never been with a guy before. And I'm like, oh, okay.
Oh, boy.
And he's like, he basically wanted to leap straight to marriage.
Uh-huh. Right.
And
right.
was, you know, his world was changed by this experience that I thought was like a bizarre offhand whatever. So,
also, he never the guy. So he was gonna have he was gonna jump into a threesome.
We did. He jumped right into it.
Damn. Wow.
Yeah. I don't know. Okay. So
I mean, maybe that I don't know. I'm trying to think back to my beginnings, like youth. Maybe that was in a way like safer, like less intimate.
Oh yeah.
You know, in a way of like less it's just emotional. Three guys fooling around as opposed to like a one-on-one thing.
But I think he also wanted to get to me, and like I wasn't giving him sort of that return sonar ping.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So like you know whatever sort of way it worked. So then, this is the, like, not as funny part, but I'll bring it home to the punchline.
No, I love it. You know, I love it.
He, like, stalked me for, like, 2 years.
Wow.
And stalking isn't fun.
For
like,
2 years?
Yeah, for, like, 2 years. Again, pre-social media and all of that stuff. So it was a lot of, like, you know, driving home and just, like, knowing that, like, the car that just went by was his. Or, like, flat out, I remember I started a new job one time. You know, and nobody would know that I'd started this job. Literally, first day, first hour I was at this job, phone call from this guy. I don't even know how he would have gotten
Whoa.
That number.
That's,
so that was like...
And even back then, it was even harder to stalk people because
yeah,
we didn't
I don't know
have
how
all
you
these
would.
Things.
Yeah.
I mean, now you would like, you'd check in places or say, excited to start my first day at blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, now it's easy.
And a light Google stalk is fine, but like back in the day, you were really like
you
going
be a committed
all
stalker.
Out.
And how funny that you knew from the first moment that he was staring at
there
you.
There was just something.
Like, there's something weird here.
A little off.
And,
but yeah, so that was iffy and weird. Like, after about 2 years, it sort of dissipated. Well, especially because when he called me at that job, I was like, listen, I will call the police if you ever contact me again. This is way beyond the line. Yes. You know that I'm not interested. I don't know how you got this number or even knew I started this job.
Right.
Years later, Angel calls me and he's like, I was just at a garage sale and you need to come over. So I come over and he pulls out this tape and he's like, I bought this tape.
Oh.
I just thought it was like a random funny thing. And I started watching it while I was cleaning and you have to watch it. So he puts on this tape and it is like, I mean, it's gay porn, but like no one gets naked. The premise of it, I guess, is like just dudes' faces being like smushed into jeans clad crotches. Like, I'm going to take your face and just smear it into... Yeah, well, it's a very specific thing.
Fetish thing. Yeah,
you know, that I did not know existed, but there's something for everybody. And one of the guys who's getting his face is smushed into a jeans-clad crotch... was our guy.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So he went on his own journey too.
Oh my God.
Wow.
Wow, that's fascinating.
That's amazing. Do you think that all that long stalking was just to see if you would
I don't know. I was terrified that you were going to tell me it was like a bootleg of like some sex tape that he made of you guys.
Oh gosh,
I would have been like, oh my God, that would have been horrible.
That's wild.
How crazy though that... You know, also like the people that you meet when you first move out, or you're in your 20s and you're just figuring out who you are and you start to hang out with, it's like just, you know, and you're all just like discovering things together. Yeah. And, you know, and really like, let's hope this guy is totally cool now and just like couldn't deal with. So, or just like you were like, you represented everything that he wanted ultimately in terms of like to be out with a boyfriend and, you know, having sex and, I mean, all that stuff that he was like, great, this is what I want. This is it. This is going to work for me. But it's just like, it's fascinating that, you know, you just go on these crazy journeys. And the amount of nights I've had with strangers, like, I don't do that at all anymore. I mean, thank God.
Well, I don't know. Does anybody? I mean, that used to be such a lawless time, this like practically analog era.
Yeah.
You know, like you could see somebody or have these crazy experiences and unless they stalked you, never see them again. That's true. I never saw the Geely dancer again.
Yeah.
But if that happened now, he would Facebook friend me the day after.
Yep.
That's you know, there's this stickiness to even the most minor connections.
Digital trail
now.
To everyone now.
You know? That's a really good point,
You know, and you see people and you're like, yeah, we have to meet, you know. Yeah, that is, and it's crazy because I think about like the nights I would have with like my coworkers at a restaurant I worked at and just like, like weird sexual stuff would go on or drugs or whatever. And it's just like, and they would have friends over, you know, you would meet or you would go to a bar and meet these people and then go out to their house afterwards. And it was always like friends of friends and just so much like weird darkness that I like, that was strange. And, you know, yeah, it's, and you just don't have any way of knowing, you know, what they're doing and who they are. And if I met them today, I wouldn't even remember that we had, you know.
No, anything. And yet there are people that I could meet today that I would remember that we had an incredibly brief interaction with 3 years ago.
Because
like, you're
because
one of the most prolific Instagrammers,
right,
you know,
right,
or whatever.
Right, yeah, exactly. Fascinating.
Wild. That's really...
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Truth.
Uh-huh. My story?
I want to hear a story.
Sure. Yeah. So a few years ago, I stalked this guy called Kyle. So mine is also a sexual story.
I love it.
Keep it on theme.
I love it.
Also somewhat, there's some illicitness to it. So a few years.
Scandal.
Some scandal.
Body double. La, 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 la.
I love Bino DiNaggio.
Oh, the fucking best.
So good. So like a few years ago, I had broken up with someone. I'd gotten out of a relationship that I'd been in for like 6.5 years. Wow. So a pretty big chunk of my 20s. And after this relationship, I you know, you're not in the, when you get out of a relationship after that long, you're not in the best place morally speaking. I had a kind of I certainly had a slightly loose moral compass,
right,
or maybe no moral compass.
Well, you had a good excuse.
I had a good excuse.
Have a loose moral compass.
Exactly. So I was I was kind of just hippy dippy and, you know, hooking up, just trying to get back into a single life. When I found myself at this party, like in Hollywood one night, and I found myself talking to this woman who I'd met a few times before through some friends. We'll call her Jennifer for this story. That's not her real name, right. Obviously. Her real name is Selena Doman. But we were talking, and I always thought she was very attractive. She was just like really funny, really kind of bubbly, sort of lit up a room. But I'd known through my friends that she'd had a boyfriend, like a long-term boyfriend for some time. I didn't know this guy, but I knew he was around. So I put any thoughts I was hooking up out of my mind. Except this particular night, I got the vibes that she was flirting with me. Like, she was really, she was standing really close and like playing with her hair and saying really nice things about me. And
boyfriend was not there.
Boyfriend was not there. Mm-hmm. And then she kept mentioning how her boyfriend was out of town like 7 or 8 times, which is a lot of times to repeat something, you know?
Yeah.
Unless you're like, you're you're delivering the I Have a Dream speech and you're using repetition as a rhetorical device. But less motif, more reminder. And then towards the end of the night, she offered me a ride home. And I didn't need a ride home. Like, my house was like $2 from that place. But because I was a little drunk and obviously, like I said, my moral compass was a little loose, I was like, yeah, sure. And so I get in the car with Jennifer and we drive. And by the time we're pulling up outside my apartment, we've been kind of flirting a little more, getting a little closer once we park. And then suddenly there's like an instant where we just are making out. We're just kind of fiercely making out. And I can feel our hands sort of fondling below deck. I feel her like unbuckling my belt and my hands going up her skirt. And that's when I pull off and I realize, I'm like, Jennifer, you have a boyfriend. Are you sure you want to do this? And she answered me like Charlie Chaplin, non-verbally. Her answer was to pull up her skirt and hike her panties to the side and then leap over the gear shift.
Wow.
Like
an
action, Jason Bourne action sequence directly onto my pee-pee.
Oh,
and
my God.
So this odyssey began from that point of me sleeping with Jennifer with a boyfriend. And so in very short order, we start to hook up a lot. Like when her boyfriend was gone, she'd call me, we'd hook up at my place, at her or their place, once in this like dumbass motel room just to see what like a seedy affair location would be like.
Lean into it.
Out on her balcony while her dog Pixel watched the whole time. And it was very, very hot. It was just, it was hot because she was... She liked to dirty talk a lot, but she was very partial to a specific genre of dirty talk.
Oh, my God.
When we were doing it, she would say things like, my boyfriend would be so furious if he saw this right now.
Cuck fantasy.
Oh, yeah.
She would say, like, if my boyfriend saw you fucking me, he'd jerk off his little dick.
Oh, my God.
And I was... into it!
Yeah!
For whatever reason, it hit the perfect spot at the base of my reptilian brain.
Did you know the boyfriend?
I didn't know him.
Okay,
so he was
just a vague, like, boogeyman.
Oh, an entity, yeah.
Who might be watching or might not.
Yeah, I don't think he was. I think it was her kink. So this very scandalous affair goes on for a few more weeks, and again, I find myself at a different, like, a friend's house party in North Hollywood sometime, and... I'm at this party, just kind of hanging out with my friends. I was getting a little high. I remember smoking a blunt. And then I see Jennifer walking up to me at this party a few weeks later with kind of a weird, unreadable smile on her face. I'm like, oh, hey, what's up? And I hug her hello. And she looks at me with this like strange kind of cocked grin and says, my boyfriend's here. Do you want to meet him?
Oh, yeah.
And I remember feeling like my stomach drop because of that thing. Like, he's at that moment, he became not this boogeyman,
but a real
human being in this room.
Oh, that's so different.
So different. Yeah. Like, you know, when you're at the top of that, Six Flags Lex Luthor drop of doom, or whatever you feel. The story is sponsored by Six Flags.
Oh, my God.
You feel like your stomach dropped. I was like, with this realization. But because I was a little high and dumb and drunk, I was like, yeah, sure, let's meet him. And so Jennifer leads me over and she introduces me to one of the nicest guys I've ever met.
Oh, my God.
Like, top three.
Murder.
Did that make it better?
But just this like cool, like well-built dude with like a tucked-in shirt, I remember for that detail for some reason, just starts making genuinely interested conversation. He starts asking
me,
like,
oh my God, murder me, murder me.
Did you ask him how his little cock was?
I did, like, check it out.
Like, really? I want to see how that... Okay. No.
But he kept, like, he starts asking me questions about, like, India, where I grew up, in a way that's very curious, not condescending. Yeah, like, I'll give you an example of the opposite. Like, when I was in college once, my roommate asked me, hey, so do you guys have paper money in India?
Or
do you
use, my
like,
God.
You know, jewels. Like, no.
Jewels!
It's not like fucking Zelda.
Oh, my
but
God.
This guy,
I love it.
Opposite. Like, he starts asking me genuinely interested conversation. Yeah. Like, this is very cool. And the whole time, I'm like sweating bullets and just...
Oh, my God.
Like, I've been fucking her. We've been sitting together. And then at some point, Jennifer casually mentions her dog. And I just blurt out, oh, yeah, Pixel is so cute.
Oh, fuck.
And obviously no one said the dog's name.
And after, I remember seeing a look of panic on her face. I looked at her, and I look at her boyfriend, who looks at me kind of just weirdly, and he goes, "Oh, you've met our dog Pixel." Because to the outside world, we're nothing more than the very casual acquaintances. People don't know we. And obviously, I mean, in retrospect, I could have played that off in 50 different ways. Like, I seen her Instagram, or like I was on a hike and met her dog, anything. But because I have all the guilt in the universe swirling around my head, instead, when he goes like, "Oh, you met our dog Pixel," I say, "Oh, dog. I was thinking about my niece. My niece. She said it's really cute. My niece is really cute. I have a niece." And I launch into this like,
my God,
3 minute explanation of how Pixel is an Indian name, which it's not, obviously. But like how my aunt, my uncle named my niece Pixel. That's short for like an Indian god. It just like is
my God.
Spinning on
my
fumes.
God. Oh
and
my
I
God,
can
I'm
tell
dying.
He doesn't like completely buy it. But yeah. I very quickly say my goodbyes and get the fuck out of there.
Oh God.
It's something about like that moment and the idiocy of it and the embarrassment made me realize I gotta like regain my moral compass and end this thing.
So you ended it.
So I talked to Jennifer and I ended things with her. After we had sex like 7 more times.
Because I was going to wonder like if that like if for her if she was mad about that. I mean, what was her reaction?
She was jilling off in the bathroom, no doubt.
I'm sure.
I was a terrible thing that terrible, yes, was that maybe part of the reason why I said yes to meeting him was I think a part of my brain was like, this could play into a future Dirty Talk scenario. And it did.
Oh,
absolutely.
I'm sure it fucking did.
She's like,
did.
You remember when you fucked up that conversation with my boyfriend?
Bring Pixel in here. Make Pixel watch us.
Yep.
Oh,
yep.
It's your fault, Pixel. Oh my God, I love that. And
pretty scandalous.
Yeah, and but you also just like wonder like what, like how much... Like, you know, like, what was her deal? Like, was she probably, like...
I know I wasn't the only guy she cheated on him with.
Yeah,
I
just, yeah.
Yeah, I know. I think we talked about it also at one point. Like, it was clearly an ongoing thing. Mm-hmm. But I do wonder about her day. I don't know.
And if that... Or just in what the boyfriend knew. Like, at what point? Or if he, at some point... Because you also wonder,
maybe,
like...
was he complicit
was he into it, you know?
I don't know. I don't know. Not from what she told me, no. He had no idea. It was very secret, but for all I know, I don't know.
Oh, my God. How crazy.
I know.
How nuts. I love it. Well, you guys, I love hearing your stories. Just pure filth, and you're both wonderful. And thank you for sharing them.
Thank you for having us on.
I just hope this will listen to everyone. Like, have experiences. Do it. Go for it. Why not? But we're out of time, and I'm so sorry. We got to run, but I want to thank my guests, Dhruv Singh and Kyle Buchanan.
Thank you so much for having
us. Thank you so much for doing this. This has been another episode of Dhruv Jogi's Minor Revelations. Have a week.